Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
In this episode, we're peering into the not-so-distant future. We're taking a look at 2030 and what continuing education might look like 5 years from now.
Our conversation is grounded by a recent webinar we led titled, A Look at Continuing Education in 2030, Disruption, Competition, and Changing Expectations. During that live webinar, there was a lot of chat activity and some wonderful, insightful contributions from attendees.
So much so that we hosted a follow-up online meeting that we invited webinar registrants to attend. And that meeting was less presentation and more conversation. And by the way, that's something we're thinking we'll do more of going forward.
And what we'll talk about today comes out of the prep we did for that webinar, the chat contributions during the webinar, and then the discussion that happened during that follow-on conversation.
Today's discussion will, we hope, distill some of the most powerful and provocative themes that came out of all that we did to take a look at CE in 2030.
And if 2030 sounds far off, remember that's just 5 years away. Think back to 2020. 5 years wasn't that long ago, but so much has changed. So now's the time to be thinking about how learning businesses will not just survive, but thrive with their CE offerings in the years ahead, 2030 and beyond.
What we'll talk about today are 7 strategic shifts. These are areas of change that learning businesses need to understand and act on in order to stay relevant and responsive and sustainable. The first strategic shift is one we've seen building over time, and that's personalization. For years now, we've heard organizations say they want to create more personalized learning experiences. And while progress has been made, I think we're still pretty far from truly personalized, bespoke educational offerings being the norm.
Now, there are organizations that are making strides by doing things like investing in segmented marketing, mapping out learner journeys, and more intentionally making use of behavioral data to refine their offerings. But many organizations also know that they're still largely product-driven, product-first. So designing a course and then trying to match it to a market rather than truly audience-first and starting with a learner's needs and building from there.
One newer and more nuanced idea we heard in the follow-on discussion was around micro-personalization. So the idea of creating small slices of learning that are tailored to learners' immediate context and delivered at the right moment, that moment of need.
So you might think of this like a Spotify playlist for learning. Instead of a monolithic course, learners get modular relevant snippets, say a quick simulation, a 3-minute video, or a just-in-time reference guide, something that meets them exactly where they are in their day-to-day work.
Of course, that kind of personalization doesn't just happen. It depends on things like competency frameworks and self-assessment tools, and often artificial intelligence that can help make real-time recommendations. And building those systems, especially well-structured ones, that can be complex and resource-intensive.
But here's the key. Personalization is moving from nice to have to strategic differentiator. In a crowded, competitive market, the ability to say, we know who you are and what you need, that carries a real weight.
And to be clear, personalization doesn't always mean fully custom. It doesn't have to be a fully bespoke offering assembled dynamically at the point of need for a specific learner. Sometimes personalization is as simple as suggesting a learning pathway based on that learner's prior participation, that learner's job role, or some self-identified goal.
And it's also worth asking yourself, are you thinking about personalization only in terms of content, or are you also personalizing timing, format, pacing, and support? These are all elements that shape the learner experience.
And Jeff, I know that social is another element that you like to think about or talk about in terms of personalization.
It is, because social is all about dialogue, really. So whether the learner is in dialogue with other learners or with a subject matter expert, it puts the learner in the position to ask about her specific concerns, needs, issues, whatever the broader topic is, to bring it down to that personal level for that particular learner. And so, you know, social learning, cohort-based learning, community-based learning is one of those, probably the oldest form, no technology needed sort of personalization experience.
The second strategy shift we want to mention is point of need learning. And this is one of those concepts that's easy to get excited about, at least easy for me, but I think it can be hard to operationalize.
During our follow-on conversation, Gail Clayman shared an example from engineering. She pointed out that early career engineers often turn to mentors or colleagues, not CE courses, when they face a new challenge. It's informal, it's fast, and it fits their workflow.
And that's a critical reminder for CE providers to be relevant at that point of need. We need to be asking, are we even in the learner's consideration set when a problem arises? And if the answer is no, then we need to ask, why not? Part of the issue may be this older view that we're clinging to, that learners need to come to us as learning businesses versus us going out to serve learners where they are.
And a few organizations are working to close that gap. Some are embedding microlearning directly into tools or platforms that professionals already use. You can think, you know, apps or project management software. Others are developing searchable resource libraries where content is tagged to real-world tasks or use cases. Some are leveraging chatbots or other ways that individuals can quickly locate the information they need in what can often be an overwhelming set of resources that a learning business has amassed.
And there's also the potential for newer tools to help. Notebook LM, it's a Google AI tool, and it can be used to convert material, even dense technical material, into digestible audio content. And that makes the information more accessible and more usable in moments where time and attention might be limited.
And this kind of modality flexibility, so text, audio, video, whatever fits, is central to point of need learning. But to make that possible, you need well-organized content and clear metadata.
So a key question here is, what would it look like if our learners didn't have to come find us? What if we were already where they are, embedded in their moments of challenge or their moments of curiosity?
And that's a provocative vision, and one that's likely to become more feasible as AI tools get better at context sensing and content matching. Our third theme is a big one, the evolving credentials landscape. We've entered a time that we've called the credentialing or the credentials shakeup, and it's showing no signs of slowing down.
Learners definitely want credentials, but they want them to be stackable and flexible and visible. And I'd say that visible, especially online. And many traditional systems weren't designed with those values in mind.
We know of organizations issuing digital badges for certificates aimed at younger professionals, for example. This is partly about market expansion, so maybe reaching underserved audiences, but it's also about adjusting to a world where learners want more control over how they document and how they're able to communicate their expertise.
And this is where some friction can arise. Accrediting bodies aren't necessarily keeping up with these shifts, and so some learning businesses can be constrained by things like seat time requirements or older reporting systems or just other legacy issues.
Yeah, and I'd say employers aren't necessarily keeping up either. We're starting to see some transition there, though. But some learning businesses are innovating around the edges. So they're creating offerings that offer real value, but don't necessarily count in traditional ways. Of course, that can be both risky and liberating.
And we also heard the view that younger professionals are less interested in credits and more interested in skills that they can show off. And that might be in a portfolio or on LinkedIn or during a job interview.
So the challenge becomes, how do you create credentials that travel? Ones that are trusted by employers, usable by learners, and sustainable for your organization.
And that, of course, is a strategic question, and I think one that can't be answered in isolation. It needs to be part of a broader rethinking of your learning portfolio and the place of credentials in your business model.
We're taking a quick break to remind you about the 2026 Learning Business Summit, the event built specifically for people who run, manage, and grow learning businesses.
If you're responsible for designing strategy, shaping products, or driving impact and revenue, the summit is designed for you. Over 3 days online, you'll learn from practitioners who are solving real problems in real learning businesses.
You'll take part in highly interactive sessions, no passive webinars here. You can expect thoughtful prompts, practical ideas, and space to reflect and plan your next steps.
You'll also get to see how LearnTech platforms are evolving through short, focused demos, helpful whether you're evaluating tools or just trying to stay current.
The Learning Business Summit runs online January 27th to 29th, 2026. Head to leadinglearning.com/summit to learn more and save your spot. We've covered three strategic shifts so far: personalization as a strategic priority, point of need learning, and fragmentation and innovation in credentials. Next up, artificial intelligence. Arguably the biggest driver of change in nearly every industry, including CE. And in some ways, AI is hard to separate out from the other shifts we're talking about. AI has already come up multiple times in our conversation about how those first three shifts are happening.
Yeah, and AI has the potential to revolutionize how learning is created, how it's delivered, and how it's consumed. And so I think AI is both an enabler, but it's also a disruptor. And what's the role of a learning business when AI can do parts of what we do faster, cheaper, better?
Yeah, there's the very real possibility that AI will soon be able to build bespoke learning experiences from massive content repositories. So assembling a course on the fly from building blocks that are already in your catalog.
And I think that changes fundamentally the job of the learning provider. You're no longer just designing experiences. That puts more emphasis on curating and tagging and structuring your content so artificial intelligence can work with it.
And AI may reduce the need for multiple content formats. You might only need a single master version, perhaps loaded into something like a custom GPT, as we've discussed before. And AI will handle the rest, turning it into video, a slide deck, an article, an interactive chatbot, whatever, just based on the learner's needs and wants.
And that's a really profound shift. It means learning businesses need to invest in content governance. So think about taxonomies, tagging, competency alignment, and that's so that your materials are ready to be remixed and reassembled.
And you mentioned Notebook LM earlier, Salisa. You know, the ability exists now to create podcast-style guides from existing materials. And that's just a glimpse of what's to come. Imagine a future where learners expect that level of flexibility and responsiveness as the norm.
Right. And the point isn't to go out and start using Notebook LM or to choose any particular new tool to chase. It's much more about building infrastructure and building strategy that lets your learning business adapt. If you're thoughtful now, you'll be more agile later.
Theme 5 is one many of us are already feeling. CE is becoming a commodity.
Yeah, learners increasingly are prioritizing things like convenience, usability, and experience over other, maybe more traditional measures of quality.
Right. So one of the webinar participants who leads Learning at a Healthcare Association, for example, reported that some learners will choose a course that's faster and easier, even if it's technically less rigorous, because it fits their lifestyle better. And that's kind of a wake-up call.
In a crowded market, being high quality isn't enough. You have to be high quality, you have to be fast, you have to be easy to access, you have to be relevant, and you have to be affordable. That's a lot.
That is a lot. So what's the differentiator? It might be the curation, the community, or the context you provide, or maybe even some level of access to the subject matter experts. Those are harder to replicate, and they can offer much more defensible value.
I think that's interesting. That reminds me of some of the ground that you covered in your conversation with Dhawal Shah of Class Central, Jeff, especially that community piece. Dhawal flat out said a learning business shouldn't try to compete with big learning providers, think Coursera, Udemy, et cetera, on price. That's definitely a losing battle there just because of the sheer scale involved.
Right. And this ties back to business models. If your value rests solely on CE credits, you're vulnerable. I mean, what happens if someone else offers the same credit faster or cheaper?
Or if learners start asking, why do I need the credit at all? And I don't think that's a hypothetical question. I think that's already beginning to happen in some sectors.
Our sixth theme is a more internal one versus the external competition we were just talking about, but it's no less important: silos.
Yeah, we hear repeatedly and consistently about challenges related to siloed departments. So you have education working separately from marketing, and you have communications that aren't aligned with credentialing, and so on and so forth.
And this fragmentation makes it harder to deliver cohesive experiences, and it slows down innovation. Breaking down silos may require structural changes, so shared KPIs, cross-functional teams, or even reorganizing departments.
Yes, but it can also start small and less radically than some of those things you just suggested there, Jeff. So it could be that you start with some joint planning sessions or integrated calendars or maybe just a more collaborative product development process, because the goal is to act more like a unified learning platform and less like a patchwork of separate functions. And Jack Corson from the American Speech Language Hearing Association mentioned that years ago, he made the move to have the professional development team start talking to the marketing team very early in the process. So not when a course was ready to launch and they needed to try to drive enrollments, but back when the course was being identified as a need and was just beginning to be created. That's when he started talking to marketing.
Right. And, this also means a shifting culture in many organizations. So rewarding collaboration, encouraging experimentation, and sharing both risk and wins.
In a lot of ways, all seven of these shifts that we're talking about to some extent tie into a shifting culture. But certainly with that one around silos, definitely see the connection there. The seventh and final strategic shift that we'll mention today is data, and specifically the shift from isolated dashboards to data ecosystems that prioritize things like interoperability and integration.
In the past, we were happy if the LMS showed us completion rates or test scores in a somewhat easy way. And in fact, we're probably still very happy if it does that for us. But really, the bar now is much higher.
And so things like centralized data lakes are becoming more common and more appealing because these allow data from LMS, AMS data, e-commerce data, engagement data, all that data to live together, which then means you can query all that data in powerful ways. And often you're going to make use of AI to help you with some of that querying.
Right. And that kind of infrastructure enables not just reporting, but personalization, which we've talked about, prediction, and automation. But of course, it doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah. I mean, organizations are going to have to make that decision to invest in interoperability. They're going to need to choose systems that talk to each other. And they're also going to need to invest in data governance so that they can do things like make sure that they have high quality data, that the data is consistent, that there's security around all of that data.
If data is the fuel for innovation, we need to make sure it's clean, accessible, and ready to use. And that's not just a tech project, it's a strategic imperative.
We're about to recap the seven shifts that we think warrant some attention for learning businesses looking to offer continuing education that's valued in 2030 and beyond 2030. So stick around to the end.
At leadinglearning.com/episode456, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast.
If you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, please share an episode with a colleague or coworker you feel would appreciate and get value from it.
So let's recap the seven strategic shifts shaping continuing education as we head towards 2030.
First, personalization is moving from optional to essential. Learners expect relevance at the individual level, and that expectation is growing over time for true personalization, really ultimately down to individualization.
Two, point of need learning is incredibly valuable as it meets learners where they are. But we're still building out how to achieve and monetize those point of need offerings.
Yeah, that can still be a bit tricky, but I think the value of point of need learning is so valuable that it warrants trying to crack those nuts there. Then third, we talked about credentials and how they're fragmenting. Stackable, flexible recognition is in, and skill or knowledge demonstration is gaining ground over older measures like seat time.
And four, this hardly needs to be said, but AI is changing the game, both enabling new capabilities and requiring new strategies.
Fifth, competition and commoditization are real. And these realities make not only what you offer, but how you offer it important. There's a growing expectation among learners that it should be easy and relevant and enjoyable to engage with you or any learning provider.
Number six, silos stall strategy. Integration of teams, systems, and goals is key to innovation.
And then seventh and finally, data isn't just about reporting anymore. Data is really the engine for personalization. It is part of what makes AI so powerful, and it helps you make informed decisions.
And here's something extra to consider. None of these shifts stands alone. They're intertwined. Personalization depends on data. AI depends on breaking down silos. Credential innovation ties directly to commoditization and learner expectations.
If you're wondering where to begin, start with leverage points. So think about places where a single change would support progress on multiple fronts for you. So for example, investing in a data structure can help with AI, personalization, and your strategic decision making.
Or piloting AI tools in one area of your content strategy might create momentum to rethink credentials or learner engagement.
The key is to take some action and to not get overwhelmed and remain inactive. These shifts aren't a checklist, but they are signals. And your job is to interpret what these signals might mean for your mission, for your learners, and for your future.
If you're listening to this, you're already a little ahead of the curve, because the future isn't waiting for 2030 to arrive. It's unfolding now, and learning leaders have a real opportunity to help shape it.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.